Debt is Divisive, Part 2, by Gillian Gotzel. There are some thoughts on debt that I want to share. Thoughts on debt with a lowercase d before it became debt with a capital D. When the financial crisis deepened, so too language changed around debt. Terms such as debt forgiveness, debt cleansing, and moral hazard began to be part of the conversation, only these terms were being generated by the financial industry and used as a weapon against ordinary people. If you were a developer or a banker, you could argue for business renegotiation. But if you were an individual, you had to ask for debt forgiveness. Not only was a little person the lowly supplicant, the bank held all the cards. Debt forgiveness wasn't a right, it was a gift at the behest of the banks. Not only was the language changing, overnight the rules changed. The banks went from the position of throwing money at people with the loosest of terms to becoming predatory institutions, capable and ready to act in the letter of the law. Once the financial crises gathered pace, people were set up to fail. Of course, at this stage, naysayers are all pointing out that people did not have to borrow the money, that it was their choice, that they have nobody to blame but themselves, that people were greedy. Let me try and give you another perspective. For starters, had we not hit the financial crises, those greedy people might very well have succeeded, and their decisions viewed as sound commercial actions and lauded for their success. There is a very fine line when judging someone's debt. Move the needle on the time dial backwards a few years, and the general conversation might be very different. Then somebody's greed may be another person's desire to better themselves, to provide a college education for their children, to grow a business, or simply to provide a pension for old age. Human beings are infinite and diverse. Greed alone is too blunt a term to apply to borrowing. However, greed is a very apt word to apply to the banks, whose sole function is to make money, and moreover, to make money in the short term. Language is a very important indicator of what is happening in this debate, and despite the soaring levels of anger in this country against the banks, against the defaulters, against the bondholders, against the government, it has been used most effectively by the establishment. Language is being used to shame people in debt. For some reason, debt has become a moral issue, an ethical issue. Let me state very clearly here that language is a very powerful weapon in the armory of the banks. Debt is not a moral issue. Debt is a business condition. I met someone recently who said to me, "I was brought up to repay my debts." The comment sunk in, and I realised the chilling implication was that somehow, as a bankrupt, I had been brought up not to pay my debts. I was shocked. Prior to my financial collapse, I had not so much as a library fine, a parking ticket, or an unpaid debt of any kind. I too had been brought up to repay my debts in common with the 300,000 Irish families now in mortgage arrears. So what has changed? Have we, as in those of us in financial distress, suddenly changed our moral perspective, our ethics? How had this happened to not just one person, but to thousands of people overnight? Of course, the answer is not that people's ethics had suddenly morphed into those of the Artful Dodger, but the recession, combined with changing rules, forced people into untenable positions, positions that can count their cost in blood. Now, that to me is a moral issue, that debt can be a catalyst for suicide. Now, with this understanding, let us rightly use the language of the Bible to challenge this condition. Let us consider why banks can shame people, even unto the ultimate tragedy of suicide, and yet the blame remains with the person. Now, that to me is both a moral and an ethical issue.